How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It's June 21st, 2011 here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Joined as we are every Monday night by Dave Meltzer. We have tons of stuff to talk about today, including another three-hour Raw. There's been a lot of programming from WWE in the last couple of weeks now. Three-hour pay-per-view last night, three-hour Raw last week, three-hour Raw tonight. There's Raw Roulette next week, which amazingly is not 3 hours. But
Shawn Michaels is back.
Who's back?
Shawn Michaels.
He's back?
Next week.
Oh, for the Raw Roulette, yes.
Yeah.
You're talking
about... I know, not wrestling. Or
sure,
like
yes. I think you were perhaps referencing him shooting animals as well. That's the big thing on TMZ. Shooting animals without remorse.
Maybe that's why he's honest, is that the TV show, I don't even know the date starts.
I think it's starting in, I actually don't know either, but it's July or August.
It's starting pretty soon, so you know maybe he's going on to plug that. Who knows?
Yeah. So Raw Roulette here, you know, we talked about in the past the idea that, you know, you've got all of this programming that the creative team has to write, and so sometimes you get to these things where there's only so much creativity you can put into a show, and sometimes less is more in terms of creativity, and there was a lot of good stuff on this show. They couldn't really overthink a lot of things. It was just kind of some simple booking leading to some matches for Money in the Bank and some matches for later on down the road, and some things were a little bit perplexing, but overall I thought it was a pretty good show.
Yeah, it was all right. I mean, I thought, you know, a three-hour Raw, it almost inherently is going to drag, so I think it kind of did in parts. But you know, it was all right. I mean, it one of the things that I thought was kind of fascinating is you would think that when people text in, that's kind of like the viewpoint of the fans. But there were certain points, and I mean, the big one was the Kane arm wrestling match with Mark Henry, where you know they had three stips and arm wrestling one, and you could tell the people in the audience absolutely. You know, I mean, like, you know, what was the thing? Like, this is stupid, they were chanting.
They were chanting, yes. That actually wasn't...
This is stupid, and, you know, while they were doing the arm wrestling gimmick, so it's like, the people in live didn't want to see an arm wrestling match, but, you know, although, I mean, there were, I will say this, there were some really lame things, and I mean, like, maybe the lamest was in the main event, where one of the... stipulations for special rules was a 20-minute time limit match. What does that mean? Why would anyone vote for it? Although, I think it got, I don't know the number right in front of me. Hold on. It got 6%, which is, you know, the usual, you know, you're going to get some people to vote on anything just to do it. But
sure.
When I saw those things, and it was like, they've already booked this as an elimination match. I mean, it was, like, pretty obvious.
Well, I was thinking that maybe by the time the main event rolled around, they just decided, okay, we're going to put up some new stips, and maybe we didn't have planned this afternoon, but we're going to guarantee that what we want is going to be voted in. Because earlier in the show, the highlight of the show, by, like, leaps and bounds, was when they had this match with Evan Bourne. And
oh
they
my
said,
God, was that crazy?
Oh, yeah. Evan Bourne had to face either Jack Swagger, who, of course, he beat last night, Mason Ryan, who God knows who in the hell would ever want to see that match, or Sin Cara. And, of course, they make this big deal about it's going to be Sin Cara, and the fans cheer.
Did they say Sin Cara's back to Raw, or was he just on Raw for this week?
I think this is one of the special Raws where everybody's just there.
Well, I know that. I know it's, you know, well, yeah, because Orton was there and Christian
sure.
And everything, but... They said, like, maybe they just said back on Raw. I think they used the word back on Raw, but you could take that two different ways.
Sure. But he was back on Raw for the night, I think, is what they were trying to say.
Barely.
Yeah. Well, what happened was, and the idea was, it was supposed to be a match with Sin Cara. And the way that they designed this, I think they put Jack Swagger in there because they figured, okay, Jack Swagger just got beat by Evan Bourne last night on the pay-per-view, so who would want to see it again? Mason Ryan, there's no way anybody's ever going to vote for that. And then, of course, everyone's going to choose Sin Cara because it's two high flyers. So
yeah, but what killed it was the visual. When those three guys were standing there, Sin Cara looked like, you know, like so tiny that it killed him.
Well, either that or a lot of people thought they were going to do a practical joke vote and they won.
Well, I don't think you can do a practical joke vote in a two-minute thing.
Well, you can if enough people decide they're going to vote once for the guy that they think would be hilarious to face Evan Bourne, you can.
There's a lot of voters. It's hard to, like if you had a day, you know, no question you could pull it off.
Well, sure. That's why they only gave you during the commercial breaks to vote.
Yeah, but in the commercial breaks, I mean, that's I don't think that you can... get that many people, you know, to like do something as a prank in like 2 minutes.
Well, that's what happened here.
No, I think people just voted because you see the three guys, and you know, the one guy was like a monster. I was surprised myself, but you never know with audiences.
Well, everybody involved in this was surprised. Jack Swagger was laughing. Mason Ryan couldn't even believe his ears. Sin Cara just kind of stood there like, what the fuck just happened? And Evan Bourne in the ring.
You know, if you're like Sin Cara, and you're, you know what I mean? It's like you're, it's going to make you, so I must not be over.
Well, that's the impression that I'm sure people got from watching this.
Yeah.
So Mason Ryan goes down to the ring, and Evan Bourne is just aghast at this, I'm sure. And they had a match that clearly was called in the ring. I mean,
it wasn't called much.
That was kind of the point there. I mean, I'm sure
like,
that
go out there and beat him up and don't give him anything. Don't sell.
Well, I swear to you, the way that this match was put together, there's no way they thought there was any chance Mason Ryan was saying. I don't even think they prepared a match for this. It was so preposterous.
Yeah.
But they had the match and Mason Ryan won. Crowd chanted Batista. It was not horrible. Simple big man little man story. You know, Evan did the best he could.
They didn't even have much of a story though.
Well, one guy was big, one guy was small. That's the story.
Yeah, but like big man, little man, you do comebacks and you play off the size and things like that, and you do spots. You know, the little guy does spots. They didn't do any of that.
You can only do that if you plan the match out.
I know, but I'm just saying.
So there was a great spot where Evan essentially had to do a shoot small package out of the corner, and Batista 2.0 kicked out. Evan went up top for a shooting star, and then it didn't happen. And finally, Mason caught him coming out of the corner, hit Uranage for the pin. Amazing TV. This was amazing television.
Well, I just thought that it's just fascinating when you do this big video of Evan Bourne, and then you beat him.
Well, yeah. But I mean, I'm sure when they went out there, they called an audible and said, Evan Bourne is not beating this man.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But, you know, should he? I don't think Evan would have beaten Sin Cara either had they done the match. He'd have beaten Swagger, you know, probably for sure.
Yeah, but at least he had a hell of a match before he lost.
That's true.
We had CM Punk coming out to open up the show. He did a sit-down strike, and he said that wins and losses still meant something in WWE, which was hilarious.
That was a good one.
Yeah. And actually, as soon as he said that, he noted, I pinned Rey Mysterio at the pay-per-view, and I've had a great 2 weeks. That was his run of victories here that he brought up.
He didn't mention that he pinned Cena.
Yeah, he did. He did.
Oh, that's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, he pinned Cena last week and pinned Ray tonight. So he had a good 2 weeks, he said.
Well, that's a big winning streak.
It isn't WWE. So he demanded the GM...
Oh, it's even Steven. You only get one match winning streaks.
Yeah. Demanded the GM grant him his request for a title match. And the GM said, let me think about it. And Punk said, I'm not getting out of the ring until you give me an answer. So the GM said, okay, well, you know, I was going to announce you as the number one contender later tonight, but because of the way you're acting, you're now going to have to earn it in a one-on-one match with Alberto Del Rio. And Punk said Del Rio got a fluke win over the Big Show. He didn't deserve the shot. He was going to sit there and make snow angels in the ring. And so the GM said, fine, it is now a three-way with Rey Mysterio. And this convinced Punk to leave the ring. So that was scheduled for, I thought it was the main event. It ended up being the top of the second, third hour main event. So there you go. We had the first of the fan voting deals. Brie Bella was going to defend the title against either Eve, Kelly, or Beth Phoenix. Unknown to the fans, whoever they had voted for was going to become the new women's champion.
Yeah.
And they ended up voting for Kelly. And she came out. They had a match. I presume all three girls just worked out the same short match, and whoever got the... this was all legit voting, by the way. Shoot up and down the show. And,
clearly.
Oh, yeah. So, Kelly...
But in many cases, led.
Oh, yeah. It was. I mean, Lawler at one point flat out said, vote two, as they went to commercial break.
Well, so. on this one, Lawler says, I'm getting out and voting for Kelly.
Yep.
So, I mean, obviously, they, you know, that was their, you know, that was the one that they wanted, and they weren't going to leave it up to the fans. But, I mean, yeah, if people actually voted for Beth Phoenix, she was going to win the title.
And, in fact, Kelly went out and won the title. She wept in the ring. She noted this was the first title she had ever won in WWE. It proved the power of the people. She thanked all the people. And, legitimately, she won the belt because of the people.
Yes.
So
that's right.
There you go.
But, in a sense, no. I mean, like, when the show was put together, it was put together for her to win the belt.
Well, sure it was, but they could very easily
they
have voted
put
for
it up, but it's not like, you know, it's not like it was something where, you know, someone who they didn't want to win the title.
Yeah.
And the fans voted, and then they did it anyway.
Well, they could have just called an audible there as well.
Well, I think that no matter, no, whoever was going to win was going to win the title. Because I think that was the whole key to the premise of the show, is you're going to kick off with the title change.
Sure.
And, you know, they put, it was so, what if Eve had won, you know? But, I mean, they made sure nobody voted for Eve, but still.
We had the Kane-Mark Henry match. The options were a body slam match, an arm wrestling match, or an over-the-top rope challenge.
Yeah, three ones that all sucked.
Mm-hmm. So Henry came out and cut a strong man promo, talked about how he was going to kick everybody's ass, and actually a great promo by Mark Henry. So the fans then chose, of all things, an arm wrestling match. They stalled forever. They go back and forth. I realize, you know, I understand they don't want the babyface to lose an arm wrestling match, but for Christ's sake, it's Kane versus the world's strongest man.
Yeah, but it's Kane. It, like, if it was Evan Bourne, they could do that.
Well,
but
obviously.
Kane,
but
you know, I don't see Kane, you know. I mean, I understand them trying to protect Kane.
Yeah, but hold on a second. His gimmick is he's the strongest man on the earth.
Yeah, that's right. But Kane's gimmick is that he's, like, not a human monster, so he doesn't count as a man.
I see. Anyway, Kane was about to win, believe it or not, and Henry punched him for the DQ, beat the crap out of him, threw him around all over the place outside, gave him the world's strongest slam through the announcer's table, which always gets a big pop. And Henry was pretty damn good here, all things considered.
I really liked him leaving the ring. You know, I mean, it's like he was really animated leaving as well.
Had Truth come out for a promo about what had happened the night before and said he kept trying to figure out who might screw him during the match. And first he thought it might be the GM, then he thought it might be Cena. But no, it ended up being a little Jimmy. And he's ranting, and then out came Christian, and he had to bitch. He noted his foot was under the ropes in the match on Sunday night and showed footage of it and said he should get another title shot. And Truth said, you've had about a million title shots. At least you had the title. I've never had the title. It's a conspiracy. So then Miz came out, and he blamed the referee for him losing last night, which was by far the worst excuse of the three, since it was a clean finish after he attempted to use the briefcase and was thwarted. So they're all bitching at each other, and Teddy Long comes out, and somehow he has power over two of three guys who are on Raw. So he signed Miz, Christian, and Truth against Riley Orton and John Cena in a six-man later with the fans choosing the stipulations. So there you go. It was, you know, there was a lot of entertaining stuff during this this deal, but there was also a lot of comedy amongst guys that, well, I guess it doesn't matter now because they're not main eventers anymore, quite frankly. They're all back to the undercard or the mid-card. Maybe not Christian. He may get one more. But they positioned Miz as an upper mid-carder. They positioned R-Truth as an upper mid-carder. It's very obvious R-Truth is out of the title picture. I mean, very obvious.
For now.
So,
well, the thing on that segment is I thought R-Truth was great. You know, and got a lot of heat and, you know, good promo, good, great delivery. But when they were all three in there and they were doing this obviously scripted, contrived, you know, to me it was At one point, I was believing that their character would say it, and then there was that point where they were all in there and they were trying to do those comedy spots.
Yeah.
And it was so obviously scripted because none of them sounded real at all. And to me, it kind of fell apart there.
We had Dolph versus Kofi for the title. The options were a 2 out of 3 fall match, a submission match, or a normal match, but with no Vicky at ringside. So the fans ended up choosing best of three falls by 51%.
That surprised me. I would have figured they would choose no Vicky.
Well, I think that's what they thought they were going to choose, but they didn't.
Yeah.
And
because every time they do the 2 out of 3, the people in any contest, they never choose it. But this time they did.
Well, they obviously had a best of three falls match planned as a backup because they had a pretty damn good one. First fall, Vicky distracted Kofi. Dolph gave him the zigzag outside and rolled him in the ring for the pin. Second fall, Kofi hit the SOS, which legitimately was the best SOS of his entire career because it actually looked really cool. Dolph took a great bump. So fans were really into the match at this point. And I should note that after all this time, the announcers finally, including Jerry Lawler, have noticed that Vicky has lost weight. They talked about...
They brought up the weight loss because it's 50 pounds, but the...
52 pounds, yeah.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yep.
But what was I going to say? But Lawler was still cracking jokes on her.
Oh, yeah. Sure. But he noticed.
And they were fat jokes. They weren't just jokes.
No, but he did, in fact, finally notice. I think it was on last night's show was the first time that he actually acknowledged, okay, she's thinner. Yeah. So Kofi stole Delirious's finish here, the backsplash, Shadows Over Hell, went for the wacky kick on the floor, threw Dolph in the ring. Dolph got two fingers on the rope for the break, having this great match, and then it spills outside, and Dolph hits Kofi in the head with the mic. It's a DQ. This was so lame.
After like whatever it was. I don't even remember. I got it right here, though. About 12 and a half minutes.
All I know is according to the stats, this was their 19th TV or pay-per-view match since November of 2009. And all this means is there's going to be a 20th.
Well, there was obviously going to be.
At least it's good.
Yeah, I mean, their matches are always good. And their house show matches are, often the best on the show.
Wade Alberto coming out doing a promo. Still no Ricardo Rodriguez, although they do keep bringing him up, so I presume he's going to be back at some point. They teased Alberto might sue the Big Show over killing his ring announcer. We had Alberto, Rey, and Punk. The choices were no DQ, falls count anywhere, or submission only. And this was where, as they were going to the break, Lawler flat out said, vote B.
And they did.
And they did, 66%. Lawler was so happy. So, had a pretty wild match. We had Alberto taking a sunset flip powerbomb off the apron, which he clearly did not want to take. Rey did this dive on Punk, and Punk was folded up like an accordion against a barricade, which looked horrible, like just about killed the guy. German by Alberto onto Rey, went for a charge, fell outside, tons of stuff. And finally, Rey went for the 619 on Alberto, hit it, but then Punk threw him into the post and shockingly stole the pin. So, same finish of every three-way match in history. Punk is the number one contender for the title next month. So, sucks to be truth.
In Chicago, which means that he's going to be cheered like crazy over Cena.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting is that he tweeted after the show that his contract expires and he's been waiting all year to get out. Which to me, it sounds like a swerve to me.
Well, they acknowledged it on TV. He did the promo and he said,
yeah,
July 17th, the most historic day, not only in my career, but in my...
Yeah, that's right, because he said, the next day, I'm done.
Yep, said he was done, and he was going to leave with the WWE Championship.
Maybe he's going to take it to Ring of Honor.
He didn't say that, unfortunately.
He should have. That would have been great. No.
So he's not as much of a rule breaker as he claimed he was, but his contract is coming due, and there are a lot of people in WWE that think he's leaving. I also heard people...
Well, he was leaving.
Yes.
At one point. But he may be, I don't put it past him to be using this as a way. But see, for that one to work, he has to win the title.
I...
And if he wins the title, then he has to defend it at SummerSlam, which means Del Rio's out, which... So, and they could do that. I mean, they could delay Del Rio. It's not the end of the world. It's not like... delaying it's going to hurt it. So, but that's just. I mean, I know that originally he was leaving, and he may still be. I just think that the way they're doing it, you almost by doing it this way, you almost have to have him win, because if he loses and then stays, it's kind of really lame. But if he wins, then it's like the swerve.
All I know is that I am under the impression that he was going to leave for sure, and then something happened, and then he wasn't going to leave. And,
well, something might be that they give him the title.
Well, that wasn't what it was. But anyway, the point is he. I know he's been negotiating, and the way that they're doing the storyline, the way I saw it was that I think he's going to agree to a new deal. I think he's going to agree to a deal where he's going to get some time off before it kicks in. I think he's probably going to lose the match and disappear for like 3 months or something like that, and then come back with a new contract.
I would have expected that, the old way anyway, because, a way it was always explained to me was that, it wasn't like he was never going to come back, but he just needed time off.
Sure. So that's the match, July 17th, Money in the Bank, and they're doing a Money in the Bank deal as well, Money in the Bank briefcase match. I don't know if they're doing two. I guess we'll find out, a Raw and a SmackDown one. Yeah. They did last year, but we'll see if they do it again. Up next, we had Daniel Bryan, Cody Rhodes in either a paper bag match, a no countout match, or the famed collegiate rules match.
Yeah.
Only 6% chose collegiate rules.
Who was it? One of them, was it Lawler who said that he wished that they chose, or no, it's Booker.
I know that Lawler said that if they did collegiate rules, Daniel Bryan would be in his comfort zone, and I thought, of the two of these men, one of them did collegiate wrestling, and it was not Daniel Bryan.
No, none of them did collegiate wrestling.
Actually, Cody was high school wrestler.
Cody did high school wrestling, but yeah. he had college scholarships.
Sure.
So, I mean, in a collegiate wrestling match, he would wax Daniel Bryan pretty easily, I think.
Yes. Yeah, there were submissions that would change the game, but
yeah.
That's not collegiate wrestling.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's possible because Daniel Bryan has trained submissions, and I'm sure Cody hasn't. But sometimes, you know, if you're a better wrestler, even guys, I mean, if he was like a world class submission guy, yeah, he'd get him, obviously, and you know. But yeah, you know, who knows?
Cody took a suplex on the ramp. Daniel beat him all over the place. Cody finally hit a springboard enziguri, and then like a minute later, went for a small package. Daniel reversed, got the pin. So. Cody went after him post-match, put him in the LaBelle lock. Ted DiBiase made the save. They double-teamed him. No Sin Cara. And then they bagged him afterwards. So that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We had a dance competition.
Well, Sin Cara already made his cameo.
He made his cameo, but I kind of thought that he was involved in this storyline. And him not being there, I don't know what that means.
It probably just means that they didn't want someone to make a save.
Mm-hmm.
They just wanted to have the paper bag there, and they didn't want them to get run off. They want to give Rhodes and DiBiase some steam.
Then we had a dance competition, and this one was really funny as well, because it's Vicky Guerrero, and they said she was going to be facing either Booker T, Jerry Lawler, or Michael Cole. And I'm sure that they figured that Cole was going to win handily, but there were a lot of people that decided they were going to vote for Jerry Lawler. And it was actually within, I believe, 10 percentage points between Cole and Lawler.
Let me see. Lawler had 39% and Cole had 47%.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not too far.
Lawler was probably happier than he'd ever been in his wrestling career right there. Can you imagine if he would have had to go in the ring and dance?
It would have been horrible.
It would have been just wretched.
Yeah.
And so... Cole went in there, danced like an idiot. They said the winner would be determined by boos. Huh?
They say that? I thought they just said they figured it would be cheers, but they gave it to Cole because he was booed louder, which is actually... And Vicky even said that that's like completely ludicrous.
It was ludicrous.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
And she slapped him and told him he cheated, and she was the winner.
Yeah. Well, she was the winner.
Really? She was the winner.
I mean, she danced okay, and he tanked it, you know, because he could dance better than that. So, I mean, he was trying
presumably.
To lose. They booed him more. Oh, she got screwed.
We had Miz, Truth, and Christian against Cena, Riley, and Orton. One fall to a finish, 20-minute time limit. And the fans chose an elimination match here.
What a shocker. They didn't choose a 20-minute time limit.
They did not want a 20-minute time limit match.
But you know, though, what's funny about that is that the match went 19 minutes and 56 seconds.
How about that?
So, I mean, it was laid out for 20 minutes.
Yeah. And also, it's probably laid out for one fall to a finish if they wanted to, although...
And it would have gone 19 minutes and change.
I wish it would have done one fall to a finish because...
They wouldn't have to beat everybody.
Yeah, that was a deal. I mean, I don't know. So they do this match, and Riley gets a hot tag. He's running wild on Christian. And the fans weren't into it like they are a lot of Riley comebacks of late because they wanted Cena in the ring and they didn't get him. So he's running wild and the people aren't caring like maybe they should. And Cena goes to make the save. The ref's getting him out of the ring. Miz sneaks in, gives him the skull-crushing finale. Christian pins him. And I'm not saying that Riley's on his way to being John Cena, but for God's sake, you went on all the trouble last night of having him beat Miz. Not only beating him, but beating him clean. And then he just gets his win back on the next show. I just thought that was so stupid.
But
it's what they always do.
But they really didn't have an alternative.
Not do an elimination match.
Well, that's true. Yeah, yeah, not doing elimination. But they booked it for to be an elimination match. I mean, it's not like...
Yeah, this is their fault.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, that they had some idea of, you know, that people were all going to vote for 20 minutes and they got swerved.
No, this was their idea, yeah. And it was stupid.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it takes steam off of Riley. And also, the other thing is that, you know, I mean, obviously Cena and Orton are like the big two, and Riley's a way, way, way distant third on that team. But, you know, it's like, you know, when a guy is just starting his ascent, if there is such a thing, you know, you don't need to tell everyone that he's a distant third and you know, that he's not really on the league of the other two. And they sort of did to me.
I mean, he wasn't the only one here. So they keep going. And we've got Cena getting beaten on forever. Miz goes for the skull-crushing finale. Cena hoists him up for the FU. Christian tries to interfere, but Cena swung Miz's feet into him, knocked him out of the ring, hit the FU. 1, 2, 3, there goes Miz. So yeah. He's done.
Well, I mean, I actually liked that finish the way it was done. I thought the swinging him into Christian was pretty cool.
It was well done, but have we reached the limit for Miz yet? I mean, where... This guy.
No, they now have the idea that because he can talk, that they can do this to him every week.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah, and he'll stay over.
Man, what a career he's bound to have here.
Well, Ric Flair did it.
Dave.
I know. Believe me, I know.
Orton finally gets hot tag, runs wild on Truth. Truth goes for the axe kick, misses. RKO, you're out of here, Truth. Another
yeah.
guy down.
Yeah.
So then Christian at least snuck in and speared Orton for the pin. But, you know, after seeing Christian pinned again on Sunday night, at this point it's gotten to the point of overkill. Another Christian Orton match.
Yeah, but what else do they have on SmackDown?
Well, here's the thing. I talked about this a lot on the Observer Live show yesterday. When I look at this Christian, and I remember I wrote that big article about how they shouldn't have taken the title off Christian, you know, 4 days later or whatever.
They shouldn't have given him the title in the first place.
Huh?
They shouldn't have given him the title in the first place, because if they gave it to him, they should have kept it on him for a little while.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If your
mentality is he's going to have it for 5 days, you know, I mean, I guess in this storyline, there's a, you know, there is something here in the sense that it made sense with the turn that but you know what, it would have made the same sense with the turn if they'd done it a month later.
If they'd done it 2 months later,
yeah.
I mean, if you really
he'd have a little bit of a champion's aura, because he really doesn't have a champion's aura still.
If you look at, like, all of the matches they've done in the entire storyline here, you easily could have gotten 5 or 6 months out of this deal. And instead...
Well, Christian actually would win, you mean?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you just started with Christian winning the title from Alberto Del Rio, and you do the exact same thing they did, but you stretch it out, you don't beat him 5 days later, you give him a month, maybe two, then he has the match with Orton, Orton beats him the first time, and you do the exact same thing you did with a month between matches, as opposed to, like, a week... You know, and you could easily get 6 months. And to me, listen, if there was like a great heel on SmackDown that Randy Orton needed to get to, and so they needed to get this Christian thing out of the way first, or if the plan was to put the title on Christian because you had this great baby face other than Orton that was going to be challenging him, that's all fine and good. But they don't have that. So they rushed.
They don't. I mean, I really wonder like what they're going to do for a main event in 6 months.
They rushed through a program for nothing.
Well, not the first time. Hey, remember the Chris Jericho Shawn Michaels program was only supposed to be one show.
Thank God they got 6 months out of it.
Yeah.
So anyway, he spears him, and now we're going to get another Christian Orton match, which again, at least they've been good matches, but for God's sake. So he's screaming, ranting, "I beat you, Randy. I beat you. I'm the champion." And so Orton gives him an RKO, and Cena puts him in the STF.
Whatever. I mean, I guess it's the way, in their own way, it protects Christian, but to me, and it also protects Orton, because he gets the RKO at the end. But
when you protect everybody, nobody gets over.
Yeah.
Why is it so hard to figure out?
About that no one seems to really get.
So Cena ends up tapping him out. Cena's the last man standing. Well, actually, Cena and Orton were the last man standing. They stood tall as double champions. The show went off the air. There you go. That was Raw, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I sounded a lot more down on that show than I was when I actually watched it. So.
Sure, all right. I thought it was all right.
I just didn't like the booking of that main event there, but a lot of good action
on
the
you
show.
You know what, though? If you're going to do an elimination match, you know, it's...
Yeah, but don't do the elimination match. That's what I'm trying to say.
Okay. You know, I agree with you on that. You know, because there's no point in beating. You know, again, I wouldn't want to beat Riley. I really wouldn't want to beat R-Truth this week. You know, today after beating him the night before. So, and then besides, you have to beat everyone, and then Cena won. And you know, again, that's kind of I don't know. It's like, does he have to win? You know what I'm saying? He's already the champion. Couldn't they like beat him?
Yeah.
And let like somebody else win.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, I'm not, and again, like I'm not, you know, and you know, have one of the heels beat him and set him up as a contender. You know, even if it's in 3 months or 4 months. I mean, like I don't know that he needed to win.
Wanted to do an update here on the story we talked about last night, WWE testing now for synthetic marijuana, and it is now on the ban list. If you test positive, $2,500 fine, the same as if you tested positive for the real thing. And it's a big deal among the wrestlers because when the legitimate marijuana testing for the real deal went down, people were pissed off, and they were very angry, and they turned to the synthetic stuff because at the time, you could get it legally. You could get it in head shops. You could get it over the internet. And, you know, when this whole thing came down, I mean, the email that I got last night, and I talked to some other people as well, and there was this, there are a lot of wrestlers that have this impression that this synthetic marijuana is legal, they're banning a legal substance. What actually happened is the DEA last fall, actually all of last year, started getting reports about emergency room visits from people that were using these products, K2, Spice, Blaze, Red X Don. So anyway, they at the end of last year announced that they were probably going to be doing a 1 year ban on the substance, and that went into effect on March 1st. And at this moment, all of these substances are actually Schedule I drugs, which is the top of the list. It's actually classified past cocaine at this point.
Well, then,
so,
then they really have no choice.
Yes, this is not a legal drug that WWE is cracking down on. This is, when the year is up, it was a one-year ban, a temporary emergency ban, they called it. And they're going to spend the year investigating, finding out if it should stay on the ban list. A year down the road, they may go, okay, you know what, it's fine. And
I bet they don't do that.
Well, I don't think they will, because I asked for emails last night from individuals that had more knowledge about this, and got a lot of them, including a couple from one person worked at a drug counseling facility, and he said that they had been getting a lot of people that were coming in that were having serious problems after taking this. Rapid heart rate, spiked blood pressure, paranoia, anxiety. Said that when you compared this stuff to like the real deal, he said you're much better off doing the real deal than the fake stuff. So it's a pretty serious deal, and I would not expect it to be, you know, off the DEA's list in a year. So that's the update. That's why it's banned. And again, $2,500 fine if you get caught with it. A lot of guys upset. And one of the guys that emailed me who has knowledge of it said that, you know, it is for the best for the wrestlers because he thinks that, you know, 4, 5, 6 years down the road you know, guys start showing up with the effects of doing this for a long time, it's going to be a pretty bad scene. So there you go. That's the update on that. The bill, MMA bill, legalizing MMA, appears to be dead.
In New York, yeah.
Yep.
Well, today was the day.
Yep.
You know, I mean, just, you know, they had to get it passed or, you know, and they never got it out of the House Ways and Means Committee?
Ways and Means Committee.
Yeah.
So, 2012, they got to start all over again. It's got to go through I believe like it's like four different committees, I believe. And then if it makes through all of them, it's got to be signed off by the governor.
You know, seriously, this is like totally retarded.
It's the third year in a row it's failed.
Yeah, but it's just totally retarded.
Well,
it didn't even get to a vote. I mean, so it's not like they voted. I wouldn't call it failed. I would call it stalled. I mean, in a sense, they failed.
It's a fail.
But if they had guided to a vote and it was voted down, that would be more of a failure. This is just, it got stalled out of the thing, but it's so stupid. I mean, I was having some conversations with people on Saturday in Dallas. And I mean, it almost boggles my mind how stupid this is. I mean, you know, what's it banned for? It's on television. It's like, you know, we're trying to protect the kids. It's like, it's on television. You know, I mean, you know,
why not just say, if you're worried about the children, why don't you do the old Madison Square Garden thing? You cannot go to UFC show unless you're 18.
They take that. They take that because, you know, the first time in, they're selling out anyway.
Sure,
they would take that.
I never 18. See kids at UFC
the old
events.
Wrestling was 14.
How many kids do you see when you go to UFC events?
Not a lot.
Very few.
Yeah, yeah. Well, young kids, you know. I mean, you see. Well, the tickets are so expensive, you're not going to get that many anyway. But, you know, yeah, you don't see many.
Let's do some of the questions here. We haven't done these in a long time, and we have quite a few of them. You can always send these to mailbag@wrestlingobserver.com. This person here says, I get the concept of not being able to win a championship via DQ, but in terms of a 2 out of 3 fall match, I think it's invalid. Kofi won his 2 falls, therefore the match itself, so he should be rewarded with the title. If, for example, Dolph gets disqualified in the first fall, what would be the point of continuing the match? Because Kofi couldn't get the title with a DQ win in a fall. They actually did that years back for the tag titles. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Well, the rule of thumb, and it varied by promotion, and you know, but the rule of thumb in most promotions when in the 2 out of 3 fall days was that it was a DQ in the deciding fall. If it was a DQ in an early fall, you could still win the title, but the deciding fall, the third fall, which usually, or the second fall if you do it too straight, like if it's a DQ in the first and all that, then, you know, the as long as you get the pinfall in the third, in the deciding fall, you could do DQs earlier and still change the championship. But there are exceptions because, you know, Roy Shire, one of his patented finishes was the deal where the champion would get DQ'd in the first fall, get pinned clean in the middle by the challenger in the second fall, and because of the first fall DQ, the title wouldn't change to build up the rematch with no DQ 3 weeks later, or 2 weeks later, or 1 week later, or wherever, whatever the case may be. Because I remember seeing that, and you know, like San Francisco territory was different from most territories, you know, and 2 out of 3 was going out of style anyway, but the usual rule was deciding fall, but in this case, because it was deciding fall, you know, it would have been, you know, under any of those rules ever since, except for the TNA rules when they had the title change hands by DQ, you know, that then it would have been okay. Until, remember how that one got, how they had to throw that one out because they just forgot?
Mm-hmm.
That was great.
Oh, yeah. That's why I'm concerned about this this tournament.
Well, this tournament, you know, it's like going to be really difficult to book this tournament. It's going to take a lot of work.
A lot of thinking, which is not one of their strong suits.
No.
This person says, JR has been claiming multiple times on his Twitter that Danny Hodge would own the UFC today if he were in his post-Olympic prime. Do you agree with him, and how do you think he would do in modern UFC?
Well, if Danny Hodge was around now, he'd probably go, because when he wrestled at 174 and 177, although he was better at 177 than 174, which is a manner of, you know, saying stuff because it's not like anyone beat him at either weight, but or rarely. But so he probably would have gone 170 as opposed to 185. He would remind me of a Matt Hughes, except tons better wrestling and tons better boxing. And Matt Hughes had a hell of a run in his prime. So I think, you know, you never know, but of all of the guys that were from another era, because he was a good boxer, he wasn't a great boxer, but he was a good boxer, but he was, and you know, one of the greatest wrestlers ever, and a power wrestler, which is the key, because it wasn't a technique wrestler, a power wrestler, that unless he was really sloppy and fell into submissions, it's going to be really hard to do anything with him. And he did some studying of submissions, too. So, yeah, he'd have been very, very difficult to beat. You know, he very well could have owned the UFC. I mean, more than, like, say, like any of the other guys, like a Billy Robinson or something, you know, where, you know, I mean, the problem with Billy Robinson is because of his eye and everything, he would never get cleared to fight in the UFC, even though he probably would do relatively well.
He also says on a similar topic a few days ago, a poll was posted asking who people would most have wanted to see compete in UFC if they were in their primes. Options included Karellen, Hodge, Ali, Hicks, and Gracie, among others. Who would your pick be?
Mine?
Sure.
Certainly not Bruce Lee, who won the poll.
I would say any of them. I would say Carell and Hodge and Hickson, but I don't know about Ali because...
Nah, Ali wouldn't do well.
Bad times.
Tyson, I tell you what, like, I would like to see Tyson just because it would be intriguing, but if you're talking about someone who I expect would do well, then I would say Hodge or maybe Carellin. You know, you never know. I think a young Carellin, had he trained for the sport, would be, he was pretty superhuman. So, you know, he may be the guy.
I would like to see Hickson.
You know, in his weight class, but in this in MMA from another era, you know, Hickson would have done very well. But in this era, I don't think he would have done very well.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, you know, with Hickson, obviously, you know, even Elio talked about the 400-0 record being bullshit, which obviously it was.
Well, I mean, but obviously,
the thing with him is you know, real high level top black belts. All
yeah,
say
jiu-jitsu match.
Well, sure, but
I mean, I know what you're saying. I mean, no. I mean, I know he's great in jiu-jitsu, but at the same time, I mean, did he compete with the guys of this level in jiu-jitsu when jiu-jitsu was at the level it is now? No, but I mean, I'm sure he's really good at gym jiu-jitsu, and then maybe he'd even do decently well in jiu-jitsu competition. I mean, not now. He's you know, what is he, 50 years old? But
yeah.
You know, let's say when he was 30. I mean, his stand-up sucked, and you're not going to, you know, in modern MMA, you know, and his takedowns were okay, but it wasn't like they were great. So you get a jiu-jitsu, you know, I mean, so he's Damian Maia, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, you know, it's not like Damian Maia's going to beat everybody.
That's why I would like to see him today. I would like to see how well he would do.
Yeah.
The thing is, you would talk to people that would say he is so much better than Damian Maia on the ground.
Yeah, but
in his prime,
some of that is you know what I'm saying? Like when someone's a master. I mean, I remember people when just an example in the '80s when I would go to Japan, and all of the wrestlers, you know, would say, "Oh, you know, if it was all real, nobody would beat Carl Gotch." And I was like, you know, Carl Gotch was in let's just say 1984. Carl Gotch was 60 years old. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, somebody's going to punch him in the mouth, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or there's going to be, you know, I mean, I'm sure he against an untrained guy or a total worker that's never trained for shooting, of course Carl Gotch is going to submit him in no time. But you know, against a world-class guy, you know, I mean, like how many 60-year-olds do we see like running wild in UFC competition? But that's what everyone would have said.
Well, so it would be fun to see Carl Gotch in his prime today.
I would say that. You know, but again, Carl Gotch never trained in boxing. I mean, so he was, you know, Olympic caliber wrestler, and you know, trained at Wigan, and you know, obviously very good at submissions. But I would almost rather see Lou Thesz. I don't know that Lou Thesz was as good as Carl Gotch as a wrestler in his prime. But Lou Thesz had really freaky reflexes, and I didn't sense that with Carl Gotch. And I think that Lou Thesz, had he trained, you know, he had long arms, and he was, you know, 6'2", which was, you know, in that era very tall, and just naturally well-conditioned. I think that if he had trained for striking, he'd have been pretty damn good. Whereas with Carl Gotch, I have no impression of that at all.
Well, so, that's the other thing. You presume with all of these guys, no matter who they are, that... If, when asking, would you like to see them nowadays, it would be, okay, well, this person would be in their prime, and they would obviously know the game, and so they would train all aspects of it. So, knowing that, who would adapt best?
You know, who would adapt in reality is a crapshoot, and I'm just saying Thesz, because I know he had the reflexes and he had the hand speed. You could just watch him work. But, you know, and again, that's pretty weird. Okay, you watch him work, and he's really quick. Does that really mean he's going to be a good fighter? No, it doesn't necessarily mean that, but it does mean that there's certain... genetic disposition that might make him a good fighter, and with Gotch, you don't see that kind. You just never saw that. You never, you know. So, but again, it's who knows? I mean, when they talk about that type of stuff, you know, and I read most of Thesz's book this weekend. You know, the revised copy. It's awesome, but the, you know, it did bring up like, you know, like Stranger Lewis and all these guys and works and shoots and, you know, back in the old days. And it's a fun read when you read it.
And finally here, I see that WWE stock is currently $9.55. Does Dave think this is a good value at that price? And do Brian or Dave own any WWE stock?
I own no WWE stock.
I don't.
As far as a good value, I mean, it's probably underpriced realistically, but it shows that Wall Street's got no confidence in it. I mean, it's a company that's going to make money for a while, you know, just the way the whole revenue streams are. And also, even if it gets stale here and it's kind of weak in popularity compared to other points in time, and it's not weak, you know, weak is probably not even the word. It's average to slightly below average, you know, level. I mean, I know that I have a feeling that wrestling overall feels less relevant than at any time, although the mid-90s was much, much lower than it is now. But, they've got international and things like that. As a company, like, I'm not saying they're going to be fine in 15 years because who the hell knows, but they're going to be fine for the next several years. So, but Wall Street, like I said, you know, the thing when Vince made that big speech about, buying companies and, you know, they haven't yet, but when he did that, you know, the stock went really down because people there clearly have, you know, they have confidence in Vince McMahon to a degree as a wrestling promoter, but they have no confidence in him in doing anything else, and track record-wise tells you that, you know, that's probably the right way to view it. I'll tell you what, if something happened to Vince, I think the stock price would drop significantly.
Oh, yeah. I think that's, I don't know how far, but I think that's, it's inevitable it will happen.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know if it's not going to drop to 4, if it's 9, but there's going to be a drop, you know, when that happens, if that happens. Well, you know. I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, he could live to be 95, or he could, you know, I mean, anything can happen.
And that is going to do it for today, everybody. We're going to be back on Wednesday with a brand new show. Tomorrow, brand new edition of Figure Four Weekly is going to be online. We'll have a new edition of The Observer in the next 2 or 3 days. It's going to be delayed just a little bit. Long weekend, but we'll get it up here. Probably have another back issue up as well. There was a new back issue up that went up today, so check that one out. And that is it from here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow night.